You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You are certainly welcome to call, text. You can be anonymous, of course. You can email dmlive@breadboxmedia.com, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can also log on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com and look at all the archives from previous programs. And I have actually been playing some archives this last couple weeks here and there. I've been right here with you. Other times, not so much. Recently, last week, I was not able to get a good connection because I was attending a funeral. And today. One, it's another day of life. And in life, there's always hope. So we get that out of the way right there. The sun is shining. I want you all to just look at the sunshine. If you're at a place where you're not, I think probably all of you, maybe, depending on when you hear this, well, at least if it's not, then you look at the moon, look at the stars, look at the birds, look at the people next to you, look at the people outside, breathe the air. Life is precious. Life is very, very precious. And I'm looking at that not out of fear, because death has just been raining down here recently in my own experience. And I'll tell you a little bit about that. I want to talk to you a little bit about your family. I want to talk a little bit about who is your family. I want to talk about depression. I want to talk about guarding your self, guarding your life, being watchful over your life, and what some of the early church fathers, the desert fathers, have to say about that, and the desert mothers. Because there were desert mothers, by the way. Many a priest will tell you, all you got to do is ask. Somehow we've whittled it down to always discussing the church fathers, but there were the church mothers as well. I want to talk to you about heartlessness, coldness, and how a whole human being can shrink down to that place because of pain and trauma, and whether or not we can rehydrate from that. And the answer, of course, I'm going to tell you right now, spoiler alert, is yes, we can rehydrate from that negativity, that doubt, the feeling of unworthiness, the heartlessness or coldness. Sometimes you're worried about feeling, or you express that, or the numbness that comes over you, the embarrassment after a rejection, the depression that you might experience, your irritability. These all kind of go hand in hand to make this fireball that's not so fiery, the experience of depression and all its little constellations, all its little stars around it. What's that about? And I don't want to say deal with it, because there are plenty of things that you can do, as we've talked about before. You know, you start with our basic everyday material world and you get help. And you get help in the modern medical way that you can get help. There are more ethereal things that we need to start bringing into our breath and our life. They're more ethereal. They will hydrate you from the inside out. So we want to do everything. We don't want to just do one or the other. We want to get the material, the finite. We want to be able to deal with all those things. We need to have certain nutrients, this, that. But we also need the ethereal to keep us going. So let's first, I want to update all of you. This last Thursday, I may have shared with you that my brother-in-law, my son's uncle, died. he passed. And this is a gentleman who was a veteran of Vietnam. He was paralyzed from upper chest down for, since he was 22 years old. He was shot 6 months after being in country. He was a Marine. And he lived way longer than anyone had predicted, as is the case with so many people. I think I know more people who have lived longer than predicted than I know people who haven't or who have lived within the prediction. Oftentimes they'll either be earlier or later. But just to let you all know, do not get stuck on a prediction. It's hard, hard, hard not to do, because people who are working within their own parameters. A lot of people say, well, why would the doctors even say that? Why would they even predict this? Well, it's what they know, as I've said before. But here, this amazing man, my brother-in-law, who had a very lovely family around him. He was never married, never had children, his sisters, his brother. They all were amazing. And he was amazing. And he was someone who, as I think I've shared with you before, would be with you and for you no matter what. He ingested the motto of the Marines and lived it. And at the same time, he, as many veterans are, and we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about this, but this is how incongruities, seemingly incongruities in life come up and you shake your head. But we all feel it. We all have them where you have the opposites at the exact same time and you feel, well, no, I'm divided. Sometimes you aren't divided in your opposites. Let me tell you concretely what I'm talking about. On the one hand, he absolutely hated war. He hated the military. He hated the war. He hates war. And at the exact same time, he honored the military. He wanted a military funeral. He kept dear to his heart all that came from his time being a Marine. And he was a patriot, a patriot to his core, more so than many of us would be if we are faced with things that are very uncomfortable for us. So here is a gentleman who has been paralyzed from the chest down since he was 22, never was married, never experienced a family. In his later years, he was oftentimes for sometimes 8-9 months at a time on a ventilator and then going off to live life. Close brushes with death, lived very much longer than most people with that kind of injury, because they go with from something else, respiratory problems, kidney problems, whatever, because they're paralyzed from the chest down. So they're just not moving and doing what everyone else is doing. So their bodies are not, they're not healing. They're not, obviously they have big problems. So here he lived 39 years. When we read a letter of his, which I may read to you. I haven't actually asked yet if that's cool with his sister. I'm sure it will be, because she said, you know, this was for us and for everyone because it was so beautiful. But at one point he talked about that people looked at him about how he, quote, accepted his fate, accepted his life. And he said in his letter, I have never, and he put in giant letters, you know, never. He said, I hate, and he put that in giant letters, being a paraplegic. But I have adjusted. I adjust. And in his own way, he saw life every day for the blessings that he did have. I don't even think he was a particularly religious man. but he was a wonderful man and a patriot. So I want to bring out here that sometimes we are in conflict with things that seem juxtaposed. How can you be a patriot but hate other parts of the political system? We all are facing some of that right now, right? excuse me. How can you be fully with your heart invested in the Marines, in the others that are going in the military, and yet not be for the military? Well, I don't experience that myself, but he did. And he can, because he was there. He knew what brought him in. He knew what his experience was. He said, everyone around me were young, beautiful boys. Everybody, some a little younger, some a little older. And looking back over a period of time, as he's looking in that letter, which was written in the 80s, almost 20 years ago, the reflections that continually came up as he lived his life were absolutely beautiful. And they're there to teach us many things, not because he has some great special ability, but because in his experience, he's living his experience. He's living how we can have what appears in our analytical world as being very oppositional feelings. So when we come back from the break, I want to talk about what it's like to have these oppositional feelings, how those can cause conflict, and how sometimes not dealing with them, or not even accepting them, not even adjusting to them, as he said. Adjusting to them causes us depressions, causing us mental problems. So we will talk about more of this on the other side of the break. I am your host, Dr. Michelle.
If you like what you hear on Dr. Michelle Live, please consider supporting the show by becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click Friend of the Show to provide your support today. Thank you. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. I am Dr. Michelle. You're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. You can text 573-4BREAD-4. You can call 573-4BREAD-4. You can email dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. I really want to say I appreciate you hanging in with me. I am so exhausted. I've got so much swimming around in me and in my head, and how do I put this? And I know I'm saying all this to you because I know you can identify with these feelings. I know that I have witnessed something big. I know that I've learned something big, or that maybe I haven't learned it, but I know that there's something there for me to grasp, but I can't grasp it. I can't get it around my head, my heart around it. I know that something giant has occurred, but I'm not grasping all of it. And it's not a frustration. I just know that it will eventually, what is it I said the other day or a couple of weeks ago from Habakkuk, where it says, if it comes slowly, wait, for come it will. So I need to keep that and ingest it in my heart, knowing that I'm feeling something, that something is occurring and I don't understand what it is, but I know that it's happening and I want it now. I want to know now. I want to be able to say to you, this is what I learned in the last 4 days about death and dying and love and depression and family. But I know that all life is a transformation. All life is a transformation. And so as I'm aware of, I'm not even aware. It's just that I can feel transformation happening. So it's kind of like, you know, sometimes when you're asleep, I know you all have had this at least once in your life and probably many times in your life. You're asleep And oftentimes you just wake up, but sometimes you feel yourself coming up out of sleep, don't you? Sometimes you feel yourself like you're rising up from after you've had a dive into the ocean. You're coming back up, and the water, the bubbles are like, you know, the breath bubbles are coming out as you're trying to come up to the water, and then you break the water, and we just, you know, and then all of a sudden you're awake, but your consciousness has awakened before your body has awakened. And so that is what this feels like to me. Somehow I know that I will be seeing something, I will be awakening, but I haven't gotten there yet. And that is part of our spiritual journey, is part of your spiritual journey. But it's very frustrating because I want to put it in my boxes. I want to put it in my words. I want to say, well, gee, I felt depressed yesterday, because I did, but it wasn't like really depressed. We box ourselves in with these words, and then we act accordingly. Words are powerful. We must guard against words sometimes, because if we begin defining ourselves, then we can get ourselves into trouble. I will give you an example. One example is yesterday, I'm writing a little, I didn't tell you yet. Okay, so let me back up here then I'll tell you what happened. So I am in up the coast here in California at the funeral of my brother-in-law, and finishing up with that part of this journey, of this leg of the journey, finishing up with that, I saw a family that came together, and really this was the family, my son's family. This is the family when I was a teenager that I was a part of. And I've been a part in my heart, and here and there throughout the years, we've all not kept in constant contact, but it never stopped. And even in seeing Terry, who died, or seeing all the other people in the family, the first thing they said after almost 15 years, this was a long time ago, was like, we never stopped loving you. And it really hit me. And every once in a great while, I mean, 10 years can go by and it won't hit me the same way that it always hits me, is that, well, of course you can say there's a genetic connection because they are my son's biological family. However, it's what's in the heart that matters. It's what's in the ethereal connection. God defines your family. God says who your family is. How clear can it be? Although we don't like to believe it. I don't like to believe it. Or we think, oh, well, he must mean something else. But how much clearer can it be than Jesus several times, and in the Old Testament, leave your mother and father and cleave to me. These are your brothers and sisters. These are who they are. He gave Mary to, this is your son, behold your son, as he's dying. Who is your family really? We say, well, it's other Catholics or other believers or other this. You know what? Your family is who God says your family is at any point in time. And if you rescue somebody in a grocery line because you talk to them or you smile that day, that's your family. Now, I know that doesn't give us comfort on Christmas or New Year's or Thanksgiving, but we can bring it in, make the circle a little smaller. Let's get those little concentric rings going, make it a little smaller, bring it in a little tighter, and realize that people in your life that you say in your mind, we've left, the law has broken it, or they weren't my family. We know plenty of people around us who have a new family. It's not necessarily, we're all big into our DNA and our genetics and all that, which is fun and cool to trace back. You know, it really is. Oh, I have this in me. I had never knew that. That is interesting. It brings us together in some ways. However, it also, we have to move, because what it will do, it will bring us down to a point where we have so much in us, we realize we're related to everybody. And so now where does that leave us? It leaves us with the God family. That's where it leaves us. It leaves us with the breath family. Do you know that scientists have the years and years and years ago, this is not conflicting with God. We have stardust in our blood. We have stardust in our bodies. This is not a conflict. This is a confirmation to me. We breathe in those who lived before us. We breathe in just breathing every day. There's dust of people who have died all over the place, and animals and plants and everything else. That's what we breathe in. What we breathe in gets transported to every cell in our body. It's an amazing thing. And I know I'm just going off on a wild tangent for everything, because this is big and beautiful. So I want to bring this back, because I want to tell you about Jason as well. And you all have been on this journey with me and for years now with Jason. And I want to kind of bring that in probably the next segment. But in looking at someone like my brother-in-law and what his life and death showed me, is that sometimes we like to idolize, we like to idealize, we like to make a story out of someone else's life. And that person, no matter who they are, and sometimes we'll see people who rise up out of their afflictions, and they are our teachers, absolutely, and they should give us inspiration. But they oftentimes will circle back and tell you, and it's not backwards, I am a person. Yeah, I get angry. Yeah, I hate this. I would never pick this. I don't want this. It's a struggle every day. But I'm adjusting. I adjust. Rather than accept. Now, again, we talk about words. I want to bring that back to words. In some respects, if he defined himself as, I am a paraplegic, I am a, and then fill in the blank, then you're kind of, you've put yourself in a box, and you must stay in that box as it moves through life. But if you are a person with, I know it sounds trite. I remember in the early days of HIV, before they even called it HIV, they used to call it HTLV-3. And then they did get AIDS. They would talk about being a person with AIDS, because they felt, a lot of the young men of the time back in the 80s, it was more like, oh, all of a sudden they're an AIDS patient rather than the person with AIDS. An AIDS patient is the outside caving in, a paraplegic outside caving in. Yes, a depressive, a bipolar. Hi, I'm bipolar. Hi, I'm depressed. Hi, I'm, you know, I've been harmed. I've got trauma. We're all guilty of that. I'm guilty of it too. We lead with our affliction, and we define ourselves and put ourselves out there with our afflictions, rather than I am a person. I am me. I'm Michelle. I'm Terry. I'm Joan. I'm whoever. And this is what I struggle with. I'm recovering from, or I'm struggling with, or I'm just me with this. Now, when we come back from the break, I want to connect that with Jason, the young man that I've talked to you about for so long now, since 2007, when he was diagnosed with leukemia, and the different surgeries and things that have happened to him, and what it took to beat leukemia, what it took to beat cancer, and what does that mean? So we're going to talk about that, but we're going to bring this up too, because we will be able to put this together in a way that is going to enrich us and help us in our journey to love life to its fullest. I am Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4. It's a rambling day. I seem to have many of those lately. There's so much has been going on the last month and a half, traveling here and there, having, those kind of emotional resistances, I guess, rather than battles with systems. And what I mean by that is when I was visiting my father, who's very elderly, and just seeing knowing how the medical system works and just seeing the bad part of it roll into action, you know, all have to do with actuarial stuff and money and numbers and liabilities and all that, and trying to like somehow guard against that so I can protect his health a little bit better. You know, those things going on at the same time when I was visiting him, I was going down to see Jason, who had been given days to weeks to live. And that was August 23rd is when he was given days to weeks to live. And I know that I mentioned that to you all a couple of times scattered here and there. So when I could do my program, I did. And when I was traveling in these little rural areas and had no signal, I would have to have Jennifer, thank you, Jennifer, play archives. So in this theme of knowing that something is transforming but not understanding it, I am rambling. Yes. Now, I also know that there are little bits and pieces we can bring together, and we can bring it in to look at us in the everyday mental health aspect of our lives. Because as we have seen in the Gospels, every minute you get something, in the next second, it just blows apart. You get it, and then you're just you again. And so you mess up. And that's just who we are. Bringing back to this idea of words and boxing ourselves in. That's why I talked about Terry. That's why I talked about the AIDS patients. That's why I talk about that. And oftentimes, yes, in the medical world, we say, you know, the person, unfortunately, we do, because it expresses it. It brings it down. It can dehumanize, but it brings it down to something you can talk about quickly with other colleagues, you know, because you're trying to solve the problem that could harm somebody or kill them. So you want to cut to the chase. So sometimes the language gets reduced down to the person's symptoms or the person's picture, because you got to figure out what the heck's going on so you can help them. So you try to bring it down, or you already want to say the bipolar person or the depressed person or the person with cancer, the person with this kind of leukemia, that kind of cancer, so that when you're talking to another expert, they can narrow down and start thinking in those terms and knock out a whole bunch of stuff that they don't need to think about. If you are a cancer expert, let's say, you've learned about all the different kinds of cancer, all the different kinds of age groups, all the different kinds of reasons you get it, from genetic down to environmental. So if someone cuts to the chase, you don't have to think about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of things you've learned. You can start narrowing down your field of scope. You can start narrowing it down so you can actually help the other colleague's patient, human being that's standing in front of them. So why am I telling you all this? Okay, because God gives us grace in times of confusion and sorrow. And I wouldn't even call this confusion. I am not confused at this moment. I am rambling at this moment. I am witnessing transformations at this moment, but it's not confusing. So that's what I want you all to grasp too, to embrace, to know, to love, to care the fact that you will walk through life, that part of walking through life is embracing that there are forces around you that are transforming and occurring, and you are with them. That's why I mentioned about the stardust in your blood. You are never stagnant. You are never stagnant. So when we talk about God's grace reigning in and reigning on you all the time, God is constantly transforming you. He is constantly helping you. He is constantly with you as you transform. And when you take a step in the wrong direction, he is with you when you can instantly change that direction. You can change your way of thinking. It's very difficult in some respects, and yet it can happen in the blink of an eye. So we do have, in these times of sorrows, funerals, exhaustions, depressions, changes, deaths, moves, lack, these things that seem to cause us to stop. Those are the moments we can take a breath, because the world should and does go away. And if you who've had children know that there's a moment in time, a very sacred moment in time, whether you believe in God or not, it's a protected period of time when you have your child and the world goes away. There's no world anymore. It's you and your child, and it's brief, that particular feeling and sensation. But every mother that I've ever spoken to has experienced that. There's that moment in time, it could even just be a few minutes, where the world completely disappears and it's you and your child. And that's what happens to us. That's, we have opportunities like that continually for us. So we need to think about that. We need to understand that. We need to be with that. So in these periods of time, when others around us, me right now, have experienced several deaths and several imminent deaths in just a very short period of time. It's a time of realizing that you need to listen. Silence is golden in that time. You need to listen, and you need to be okay with the fact that you do not know. Know that you do not know. And that is a huge amount of comfort and a huge amount of freedom to know that you do not know. And that that is not only just okay, but that's beautiful. It's beautiful, and it's necessary in order to grow. No one knows their next inch that they're going to grow when they live. They don't know their next wrinkle or their next what's happening in their intestines. You don't know all that. You just know that you don't know, and you trust that you are going to continue on in the manner of your life. So I told you I would tell you also about Jason. So here I am just a few days ago at the funeral. It was Thursday, just 4 days ago, 5 days ago. And get home about 10 o'clock, or get to the motel about 10 o'clock at night from being with the family and listening to the letters and the remembrances and seeing pictures and all this, and doing the funeral and the memorial and the military and the whole deal. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, I get a text that Jason has passed. And you all have been, in fact, Jennifer this morning asked me, how's Jason? And I had not actually even, I thought, wow, I'd meant to text Jennifer, our producer, and let her know, because she's been with me on this journey too. He has been battling cancer since 2007. And when I say battling, this is where I want to talk to you about words. As we are writing as I'm writing a statement, a remembrance with him and or for him on their website, as I'm feeling those things inside of me, and I'm wondering, you know, or I'm just like writing these things, I'm realizing the limitation of words. And when I remember him saying to me in 2007, seeing my father, you all heard this many times, seeing my father, I know he suffered. I don't know exactly how he suffered, but seeing my father put one foot in front of the other every day for my whole life, I know I have the courage to beat this thing. And now here we go, 10 years later, and people, at one point he felt like he was letting people down because he didn't beat it. He was the Superman. You know, that was his logo, was Superman. He said, cancer is not my kryptonite. He was not going to let that defeat him. And he mentioned that. And his brother said to him, this was just related to me, his brother said to him, you did beat this. You didn't fail. And that really hit me, because as I'm writing this, I realized he did beat cancer. I will tell you how he beat cancer in our last segment, but he did beat cancer. I want you to think about, what is cancer? And how does it metastasize? Not just physically, but emotionally and spiritually as well. We're going to learn some lessons on the other side of the break. I do want to talk to you a little bit and read to you a few things that the Desert Fathers had said thousands of years ago, because it comes right in to us. I also have something from Father Richard Rohr to tell you as well, that comes from a Franciscan way of thinking that has to do with this as well. So we're going to bring it all together, believe it or not, on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle. You're welcome to email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can also call or text 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4.
Like what you hear on Dr. Michelle Live, please consider supporting the show by becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click friend of the show to provide your support today. Thank you. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're welcome with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4. Call or text, email dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. So this has been a reflection as in a pool of water that ripples and changes. It's all about transformation. It's all about change. It's all about taking that pause in life where you sit back for just a moment, and nature, as I've always said, will have its way. Mother Nature will always have its way. Many of us question, why do I feel so numb? I went to the funeral. The funeral's done. Why am I here? What's going on? Why, you know, you can understand if someone's child dies, that's going to be a long period of grief. And yes, we have, interestingly, but not so surprisingly, different, every grief, everybody that we grieve, everyone who passes, you grieve differently. You will never grieve two people the same, ever. And there are times where people think, well, why didn't I even grieve my mother or my father? They'll ask me those questions. I didn't even grieve them after they died. Other people will grieve for long, long periods of time. You are uniquely you. And so you need to honor the fact that grief is not only a natural process, it's a spiritual cleansing and process as well. It's a connection, a reconnection, a loss, a gain. It's all the above. So there is no time limit on your grief. There are things that are called complicated grief in the psychiatric world, psychological world, if you're not eating or you're doing things that are self-destructive and harmful, because that's not about grief. That's about you don't self-harm and self-destruct because someone else has gone before you. You can feel that way. People understand. I gave you that thought before Terry died. That my sister-in-law had said about, you know, wanting to just never wanting to, or I guess he just died, never wanting to let go of his hand, that no matter what, she'd rather just invent some kind of ventilator thing she could just hook up in her own house and just have him sit there so she could just hold his hand every once in a while. That's all natural. She said she could finally understand, like in those movies where some people throw themselves as someone's being lowered into the ground. Yes, yes. you know, that's all natural. It's something for, and someone who doesn't do any of that, that's natural too. So, all right, I want to get to this Desert Father stuff and to Richard Rohr and to some of these other things, because when we talk, well, let me also tell you about Jason first. So how he beat cancer is this. When you think about cancer, cancer is an invasion. It is a perversion of your natural cells from whatever reason, damage, genetic damage, damage from some kind of environmental factor like radiation, damage from whatever. We don't know. Smoking, that's a toxin. So toxins and sometimes it just occurs. Who even knows? How did he get it? I don't know. Someone else, his own age in that town, also has it. So you never know. Maybe there was some kind of downstream pesticide or something. We don't know. We don't know. So there are these things that do occur, but think about what it is. It's a disruption. It is a perversion of your own cells that come and turn on themselves or metastasize so that they keep reproducing an aberrant cell, and it doesn't, it starts shutting down the systems. It gets rid of immune systems. It starts forming tumors. Just all kinds of stuff happens, or the bone marrow shuts down, like in leukemia, which is what he had. But when you think about also the cancerous, what happens, what can happen, bitterness, depression, wishing for death, all these things, he beat every single one of those. Every single one of those. I cannot imagine going through what he went through. Just like I can't imagine going through what my brother went through or other. When you see their bodies and the things they have to deal with, when they are met with pain, and like Terry said, he didn't accept it. He adjusted. But sure, they had their moments of pain, crying, anger, wishing like anything, praying. Everyone I've talked to in these situations who I've been close enough for where they discuss this with me, said that there are times they just begged God, begged to take it away, begged. And at the same time, within seconds, when they're met by someone, a little child with leukemia, a veteran without any family members. These are just a few of the people that I know. Terry, with all the people that in his life when I knew him quite well, my brother, just other people, strangers who I dealt with over the period of years. The light, they allow the light to shine in them. They meet the other person with encouragement. They don't have a, they want to give up sometimes, but they don't give up. So their head and their heart may have emotions and feelings, but the grace of God motivates their feet, motivates the spirit shining through their eyes. They become the embodiment of grace. Grace shines from them, pours from them, springs up from them, so that as they, so when I look at Jason and I'm realizing that he's a person who was transformed, his transformation, part of that came with cancer, part of mine's coming from whatever it's coming from, part of whatever, we have certain lifespans on this earth, we don't know the time or place, and it's painful. And I look at the things that he went through, I mean, just physically, and the different surgeries and this and that and the failed surgeries and the, oh my gosh, it's unbelievable. And yet when I was down there, he's driving me around in his car, talking on the phone, giving sustenance to someone else who was given days to weeks to live, showing me where they fish, feeding the catfish, feeding the ducks, laughing, introducing me to, you know, tattoo masters or whatever it was. This is life. This is life. And as time went on, when I went back the second time before I left that state, went back the second time, and it was as he was getting closer and closer to death, he still was open and loving and laughing. And in fact, he took one other, the friend of his father's who was a veteran, he took him around in a boat for 4 hours. And when he walks back in the door, the hospice nurse had been waiting for him. And you think, wait a minute, turns it all on its ear. It's because he wasn't bound by those things. He wasn't bound by those definitions. They didn't bind him. He knew what he was. He was adjusting to what his transformation was. And yet at the same time, he knew when he wasn't ready to go. And somewhere in him, he knew when he was getting ready to go. So here's something from the Church Fathers I wanted to read you. It's from the Book of the Elders, Sayings of the Desert Fathers, translated by John Wortley. It says, unless our inner person be on its guard, it is impossible to protect the outer person too. There are three powers of Satan that impel one into all kinds of sin. First, forgetfulness. Second, negligence. And third, desire. If the mind is on the watch against forgetting, it will not become negligent. And if it not be negligent, it will not come to desire. And if one does not desire by the grace of Christ, he never falls. Now, remember, this is a translation from ancient times. In this section, which is called Being Ever Watchful, it's about sayings that other people had gotten from the elders, the Desert Father elders. So somebody came in and said, a brother told an elder, I'm not aware of any conflict in my heart. And the elder said, that is because you are a building open on four sides. Whoever wants to come in and out without you being aware of it. If you have a door and close it, disallowing entry to anybody, then you will see them standing outside doing battle with you. In other words, to interpret that a little bit more into what we're talking about today, the awareness that you're able to have, if you guard yourself, if you guard your, and not guard by keeping people out, but you're watchful over your transformation, and you do not let whoever it is tread on your being, on your soul, whether it's a well-meaning world that is diagnosing your illness, so that you are not defined by that, whether it's someone who's weaseled their way into your heart, a boyfriend, a girlfriend that somehow draws life from you, no matter what it is, if you have that where your center and your mind and your heart and your soul is not forgetting that you are made of stardust, that you are made of God dust. You are a child and a spirit, first and foremost, of God. You live in this natural world, and you're not negligent of that natural world, but you witness truth, which truth is only life and love. And as I look at Jason and how he actually beat what could bring someone down, he beat it completely. We'll take some of this up tomorrow. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. Thank you for being here with me. God bless all of you.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.